Good afternoon, everyone. Please be seated. This is the time and place set for Weingarten versus Mr. D, LLC, case number 75664. Are counsel ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Eccles, could you let the clerk know how much time, if any, you want to reserve for rebuttal?
5 minutes, Your Honor.
Very well. Red light will go on. You'll be 10 minutes in, and then that light will come on.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. Micah Eccles for Appellant Weingarten Nostad, Inc. This is a commercial land lease case with a counterclaim for intentional interference with prospective economic advantage, which we've called IPEA. Let me go ahead and take the counterclaim first. The District Court had three opportunities to get rid of the IPEA counterclaim, and we've assigned error to all three opportunities. The first chance was in the summary judgment proceedings. There were two motions filed by Weingarten, one on its own claims, one on the counterclaims. There was a lot of briefing and a lot of documents attached, but the interesting thing we noted in our opening brief is that there was no argument regarding the intentional interference claim. No argument, no documents, and so our first contention is under the Clark County School District versus virtual education software case, the court should look back to the summary judgment proceedings and first rule that the case should not have proceeded on that counterclaim past the summary judgment stage. The next stage the case reached when we asked for the interference claim to be dismissed was a 50A stage. Evidence had closed. We filed a written brief on that evening in jury trial. And Judge Williams heard argument, obviously outside the presence of the jury. He dismissed the intentional interference with contract claim, saying there was no interference with contract as to Nevada State Bank because they didn't have one. There were only negotiations. And then the way the judge interpreted kind of throughout the trial is he said, well, the intentional interference with prospective relates to Starbucks, which we objected to at that time, and it's also in our brief, that there was no claim as to Starbucks. And that's when the court entertained an oral motion to amend the pleadings at that point. We said, Judge, there's no evidence that satisfies all the factors under 50A. There's no substantial evidence to support all the factors of prospective economic advantage. In fact, the trial testimony confirms that. What we have is we have Karina Roper, who was the leasing executive for Weingarten, and she had dealt with Adam Malin, who was the broker for Starbucks. And both of them testified to the same effect. Karina testified and she said, well, you know, Starbucks told me two important points. Number one, and Adam Malin confirmed this, we don't want the Starbucks name getting out that we're looking at potential properties. Because then once that happens, usually everybody wants to raise the prices. So he said, you cannot disclose the fact that this is Starbucks, number one. And number two, Karina offered. She said, hey, Adam, do you want to talk with the tenant? Because he's still in there on a lease. And he said, under no circumstances do I want to have a third party involved in this. I need you to have possession of that property when we do a deal. And so there was no prospect, so to speak, Your Honors. There wasn't even an opportunity, because it would be like, I tried to think of a common sense kind of approach, and I'd say, well, if I'm in college and my mom says, hey, are you going to get married? And I said, well, I think I am someday. Well, do you have any prospects? I have to at least identify some potential prospects. And here, Mr. Dyke testified at trial he didn't know about this. And it's not that we suppressed that information. We offered to give this to Starbucks. We said, hey, do you want to deal with the tenant? No, we don't want to. And so that takes care of the prospective element. We didn't interfere with any prospective contract because there wasn't one. Starbucks never wanted to form one. There's no intent here. All Karina Roper was doing was trying to lease the properties, all in the strip mall. And Ritz v. Klein is a case we cited that Weingart was justified in pursuing other opportunities. Mr. D had already expressed its interest that it was going to close up business. It was leaving. Business was down. Some employees had been stealing from them. There really wasn't anything else for us to do. On the damages, one of the elements of the IPA claim is they have to have damages. So we've attacked this in a couple of different ways. The damages are speculative. There's a $400,000 amount.
You know, I think I'm not sure that you had the Nevada State Bank claim, and it seems less than speculative. Somebody was willing to pay $400,000 or $600,000 to get out of the lease. I thought it was interesting that you don't argue the point that you had the contractual justification or privilege to do as you did for Weingarten. That to me would have been the more obvious argument, yet you're really not making that in terms of the elements of intentional interference.
We did, Your Honor, and that was my citation to RIPS, that we were justified in going forward, and you know, we had to lease these properties. That was our justification or our privilege under that element.
I'm interested in the I don't want to drive your argument here, but I do want to hear about the $120,000 TI, tenant improvement allowance, that you contend Starbucks got from you that you can pass to Mr. D, if I understand your claim.
Correct, Your Honor.
And I'd like to hear from you on that.
So this is from Section 16.03 of the lease.
Yes.
It's right in the lease that there was going to be broker's commissions, tenant improvements. And there was also an order in limine that was entered during trial that said that, it basically said that Mr. Dyke can't argue against the commercial reasonableness of these amounts. So there wasn't really any challenge to the amounts. The idea was whether they can be recovered. And so that was the only argument we had.
Were there tenant improvements that Starbucks did that Weingarten paid for or gave credit for?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And where's the proof of that? What's the record site for that?
I think it's Trial Exhibit 100 is the calculation of our damages.
But what does the record show? I mean, there's this argument over the value of the building, whose building it was, and I get your point that the building was, it was ground lease with the building on it. But the briefs give me the impression, and I didn't have time to go through all the record on it, that the building was in pretty good shape and that Starbucks was able to move in without a large expenditure of resources, and that whatever expenses were made would inure to Starbucks' benefit over a 10-year term, so they wouldn't necessarily have been fairly taxable to Mr. D's.
And that's not accurate, Your Honor.
Okay, tell me why and what the record is.
So this was a Sheridan's Custard location before Mr. D took it over, and so that would have been a fairly easy transition. But Starbucks has very specific sets of plans, and they want them all to look the same. And so what we've called the $120,000, it's a tenant improvement contribution. That wasn't the total price of the tenant improvements. It was much more. And Starbucks absorbed the rest of that. That was just the contribution. And one thing I want to keep in mind, Your Honor, is when this was done, we're still within Mr. D's tenancy because he signed a renewal letter. Now, he could have just let his previous lease lapse, but what he wanted to do is he said, let me do a renewal letter, and then let me see if I can have somebody else assign this renewal to somebody else. But had he not signed that renewal letter, we probably wouldn't even be here. But he just wanted to try to get some benefit out of that building, even though the lease said he couldn't.
So was there evidence presented at trial, and sorry that I didn't get through the whole transcript, but about the amount of tenant improvements incurred and the payment of $120,000 for part of it?
Definitely, Your Honor. Trial Exhibit 100, I believe, is the exhibit that summarizes everything.
Right.
And tells that was money that was actually paid out of Weingarten's pocket. That wasn't a credit. That was money that was actually paid by Weingarten for the tenant improvements, went to the third party, obviously, the contractor.
And what was the Starbucks term of lease? It was 10 years, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, again, can I go back to the tenant improvements and the $120,000 figure? How did you come up with that? You said it was a contribution to the overall improvements. What was the formula? I mean, could it have been $200,000, $300,000? Was that part of the negotiation?
No, it's because the $120,000 was kind of standard. And I believe Adam Malin testified to that. It was kind of a standard tenant improvement contribution. It's what Starbucks wanted. And now what we did is we did get an increased rent for the space, and we gave Mr. D credit for that through the end of his lease. So you compare the end of his lease to the beginning. But that's how the $120,000 was just standard in the industry, as well as the $30,000 broker commission, which Adam Malin also testified to.
Thank you.
I see my rebuttal time is ticking away. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. Jim Whitmire appearing on behalf of Mr. Dees and Richard Dyke, and with me in the courtroom here is Mr. Dyke.
Welcome.
I will first start off, and thankfully I'm not too scripted here, with the tenant improvement issue. That is a classic double recovery type claim that Weingarten made throughout this case.
Are you saying that he rebated that $120,000 back to Starbucks as part of a rent incentive?
What I'm saying, Justice Perigary, is that the tenant improvement allowance was part of a brand new lease that mm-hmm. was testified to at the trial. They took the premises as is. With respect to Justice Pickering's question, I think that they put in about $5,000 for trimming up some trees. The sticks and bricks were in great shape. Perhaps the best part of the record that illustrates the double recovery type claim made by Weingarten is Trial Exhibit 353, and then there's another one, Trial Exhibit 61A. These are 13 Appellate Appendix 2933, and then 14AA 3175. But in summary, those internal documents discuss, even after the tenant improvement allowance, Weingarten is documenting that they're picking up a base rent increase of about 25% plus or minus. And then after you back out the tenant improvement allowance, they still had an increased rent of 9.47% even when you back out the tenant improvement allowance. Our contention in this entire case has been that Weingarten was repeatedly over-aggressive, trying to pass on to Mr. Dyke and Mr. Dees a brand new lease. And as Judge Williams correctly noted, and it was cited in the brief, you know, when this case came in, it looked like Weingarten wanted me to mechanically apply this lease. And Mr. Whitmire kept peeling back the facts, and Judge Williams said the light went on. And this case isn't so simple. And throughout this case, Weingarten will cite provisions of the lease that say X, Y, Z. And our position at the trial court level was, time out. There's a whole plethora of case law in Nevada and elsewhere that says you can't have a double recovery. And that sort of...
I'm still confused where the double recovery is.
Because...
Starbucks comes in, complete their duty to mitigate, they get a new tenant, the new tenant is bringing in higher rent, they credit the higher rent against the amount otherwise owed by your client, but they also charge your client for the amount needed in incentives to bring that new client in. What's wrong with that?
But there's case law that we cited in the brief that says if the chain is broken and this is a brand new lease as opposed to just mitigation, one of our contentions at trial is this isn't just mitigation. This is you are improving your position. You wanted Starbucks, a better tenant, a $1.2 million value of the new lease. And another point is that this goes into a damages question, and this fits in within their additor argument, which we believe that the standard of review is that the damage amount would have to shock the conscience in order for the court to overturn that damage award, and that there was for sure conflicting points of view on this, Justice Kadish. I mean, we went round and round, and one of my contentions was, look, there was a building value of sticks and bricks that one witness testified to was $750,000 if you had to buy a shell. And one of our points is there is no damage. You were delighted to see Mr. Dees vacate. You now have a national brand that your own internal documents were stating how much better this is, and we believe that that is trying to pass on a betterment that they had onto my client to have a double recovery. But in any event, that was a jury question for which there was conflicting evidence and for which the jury could make the determination such that we're not into the shock to conscience realm.
Are you saying there wasn't actually tenant improvements done?
My position is that, yes, Starbucks came in, Starbucks built out the space to customize it for a Starbucks deal,
sure.
But that was a brand new lease that wasn't a mitigation scenario. That wasn't, my client did not leave the place in shambles. It was a...
No, but they left it empty without rent being paid.
And the jury awarded that rent portion as part of the $125,000 plus or minus amount on the amount awarded to Weingarten. But what Weingarten wants is, on top of that, not just the rent differential, but also the tenant improvement allowance and also a brokerage fee. And we cited cases.
Didn't they have to spend money to get a new tenant in?
We believe our point was that the causation chain was broken and that this amounts to a double recovery and that it amounted to a jury question and that it wasn't just a clear-cut issue of this is and it falls into a causation question. That new lease was not because of Mr. D's vacating. And Starbucks...
Well, they couldn't put Starbucks in unless he left, right?
Well... I guess that's maybe a segue into my next point.
Before you leave that, though, on 1603 in the lease, it says tenant shall also be liable for and pay the landlord, I'm going down, the costs of repairing, altering, remodeling, or otherwise putting the lease premises into condition acceptable to a new tenant or tenants. Your colleague on the other side of the aisle is saying, look, that's what it means. It means, like, a tenant allowance for the new tenant to come in and start paying money. What's wrong with his argument on that point?
But I'm saying that even with that tenant improvement allowance of $120,000, Weingarten's own internal documents calculating are saying that they are still better off to the tune of 25% of a rent increase and 9.47% even after you factor into the tenant improvement allowance, and that ultimately that's a jury question as to whether or not the Starbucks lease was truly, truly a form of damage. And one of our points was that is not damage. You were seeking a better tenant. Your internal documents were making that point clear over and over. We're better off. We've got a national tenant. It's better visibility, and on and on and
well,
on.
And also, I mean, it strikes me reading that clause that if your client had gone to the end of the term of the lease without extending it and said, here are the keys, I'm done, goodbye, and then they do this same thing with Starbucks for 10 years, whatever tenant allowance is... Your client would not have the building. I mean, I'm not accepting that your client had any rights to the building once his ability to occupy it under the lease was extinguished. But Weingarten would have had to pay whatever the tenant allowance was for the 10 years on the new Starbucks lease. So I'm trying to, is it your point that the damages caused by virtue of having to give Weingarten the TI credit or TI money was something that would have to be given to any new tenant regardless of your client's breach? And since they got in, they got a rent-paying client,
why should you be taxed with that TI? I mean, it makes some sense to me, but I have to push myself to get it to read that way.
What I'm saying is that the $120,000 to have some new tenant occupy the premises, it's really about $5,000 for the tree trimming. But putting that aside...
So what does that mean? Are you saying they didn't actually do improvements that cost that money? Are you saying it's a made-up number? What? I don't understand the point.
I'm not saying that's a made-up number for the Starbucks build-out.
Okay.
But what I have issues with that we argued at trial, and going back to the moment where there was a 9-day jury trial with Judge Williams vetting this case and giving it serious thought, is that Starbucks was targeting Mr. Dyke's building before he even vacated the premises.
Right.
Targeted interest. Be creative. Let's recapture the property. Have you got a number from the custard guy as to how much he's willing to sell the
but
building?
But analytically, what you're really saying is that it's the same thing as if the lease had just expired on its own with no breach by Mr. Dees. He said, I'm done. Here are the keys. I'm out of here. At that point, to lease that property to Starbucks, they would have to have a TI. And they got a 10-year lease with Starbucks on what was 3 years remaining on your client's arguably breached lease. He abandoned the premises. So I guess what I'm getting at is it's a causation argument. You're saying they would have to incur that expense anyway if he had performed fully, because to get Starbucks in for 10 years, you're going to have to give Starbucks 120 TIs.
I believe I agree with you, Justice Pickering, and I absolutely agree with the notion that it's a causation question. And I absolutely believe that this fits within the Adder type standard, where this has to be way off the mark for there to be Adder in this case. And this is a particular case where I have a whole newfound appreciation for the trial court level. And going back in the moment with a 9-day jury trial, and I'm not going to run away from trying to take protection in the various standards of review in this case, because the circumstantial evidence instruction, I'm telling you what, in this case, it's like, wow, that means something. The credibility of witness instruction, wow, that means something. The construe inferences and what have you, that means something. The Nevada case law that says damages don't need to be calculated with mathematical certainty when the wrongdoer commits something, that has meaning. But in this case, you know, when I read the appellant's very capable briefs, I look at it and I'm saying, wow, there are 5 issues raised, 4 sub-issues in each issue, there's 20 issues. I'm thinking, how in the world does any jury verdict ever stand with this sort of full-on slot attack?
I think it would be helpful for you to talk about the 400,000 IIED, I mean, not IIED, intentional interference.
Thank you.
More often see emotional distress. But.
Intentional interference with prospective economic advantage.
Yeah.
There is, without question, Starbucks was interested in that building.
Right.
And another point that's very important here, we didn't even receive the most important documents in this case.
We understand the facts on that, but legally, how does...
What's the basis for your client having that claim for interference with somebody they never met with or talked to, and what's the basis for damages arising out of it?
Sure. Several bases of damages. Mr. Dyke's own testimony, $400,000. The Nevada State...
Well, how is that damage from interference somehow with Starbucks?
I think that there are multiple pieces of evidence that is part of the substantial evidence. Conflicting evidence, don't weigh the evidence at this stage of the proceeding, but $400,000 from Mr. Dyke, $400,000 where we know Nevada State Bank was interested in the property.
What evidence is there that Starbucks somehow if not for interference by Weingarten, would have done a deal with your client and he would have come out of it with $400,000.
And part of this, I go back to the 9-day trial, circumstantial evidence, where there is direct testimony from Mr. Malin about, Ms. Roper, do you have a number that the Custard guy is willing to sell the building for? We have particularized interest in this property. They were pursuing that property for over a year. They were discussing creative ways for Weingarten to recapture the property. One of our points is, even if it wasn't a $400,000 figure, perhaps Mr. Dyke could have at least, and like he testified to, I would have jumped on it like a dog on a bone in order to be able to do a deal to try to get out from under the purported personal guarantee. And this is one where...
I get that Weingarten knew or should have known that your client was in that, because why would he have renewed that if he didn't hope to get something like he was almost got with Nevada State Bank? But the fact of the matter is, your breach of the implied covenant claim, the jury found against you on, and so you have to fit this into the intentional interference with prospective business advantage, and the elements are a little tough.
And my concluding point is, I don't think that Starbucks or Weingarten or anyone in a defense posture on an intentional interference claim are going to come out and confess to it.
Yeah.
I think you have to establish that sort of claim by circumstantial evidence, as Judge Williams cited to that in the extensive post-trial hearings, where we went on for hours and hours. And Judge Williams gave Weingarten a fair shake procedurally and substantively. And my concluding point is, we're asking that Weingarten not be allowed to do a complete do-over in front of the Nevada Supreme Court that didn't have the benefit of having 9 days of jury trial testimony where it was palpable that something was wrong, and that Mr. Dyke, who was begging not to have this fight, was wronged. And after the Starbucks evidence was produced, and we were getting Starbucks materials even during trial, where I'm establishing my case on the fly. And I know I've gone over my...
You have. So thank you. Thank you very much.
You.
Mr. Eccles, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. So the standards of review in this case actually favor us, because we're talking about the denial of summary judgment order, which is de novo, and the 50A and 50B standards are also de novo. And so counsel can't hide behind what the jury did, because we've made a substantial evidence challenge. And it's the same challenge we made in front of Judge Williams. We said, Your Honor, have them identify all the elements of the intentional interference claim and tell us what the evidence is that supports each one of those. And we just don't have that, Your Honors. Before I forget, I wanted to make one reference here. The construction rider to the lease at section 1.05, and in the record it's volume 4, page 749. In the construction rider, and we've mentioned this several times throughout our brief, but basically it says, because this is a ground lease, as soon as there is any building constructed on this, it becomes the property of the landlord.
Right.
And so because this is a lease that started with Mula for us, went to Sheridan's, and then to Mr. D, Mr. D didn't even have a claim to this building at all. He had the right to use it during his tenancy.
I think we're clear on that.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. The argument about additor and the lease damages, true, it's an argument we raised post-trial in additor, but we raised the same argument in summary judgment. And so if the court is inclined to look at all those provisions of the lease, we raised all those in summary judgment. Now, something that's kind of troubling to me is, you know, counsel doesn't want to abide by the lease. He wants to just throw it out the window. But we don't have any legal theories to pierce the lease, so to speak. We don't have any suggestion of an ambiguity in the lease anywhere. That's
well, but it seems improbable to me, reading the lease, that somebody who's doing a ground lease that says at the end of the term you get the building that I paid to build, and I don't have any rights to that building, I get that, section 1.05, but that you have a clause generally about damages that is really contemplating damages if you breach early on in the lease where you have to go out and move heaven and earth to get a replacement tenant in to mitigate. Then in that instance, and the building had to be reconfigured or you trashed it, sure, I could see TI, but does that clause give you the right to TI? Let's say it was a week before the end of the lease, and he walked out and didn't pay you for the last week's lease because he got mad at you for some reason. Would you be able to tag him with the tenant allowance for the new 10-year lease that followed? I would think not, and if not, then it seems to me this is not an absolute obligation to pay whatever TI you choose to accord a successor tenant who is coming in and picking up not just what your the leading tenant didn't finish, but a whole new term of 7 years beyond that.
And I think the main distinction, Your Honor, and I know the court understands this, is we're doing this for the benefit of his account. It's part of the mitigation of damages. And so the building did sit empty for a year before Starbucks signed a lease.
But you got your rent from the jury for that time.
We did, Your Honor. But I was just talking about timeline.
Okay.
And so because this was done for his account rather than our own account, so absolutely, if this had expired and it was back in our possession and his lease doesn't exist anymore, we're still paying the $120,000 tenant improvements and the $30,000 commission.
Because Starbucks, which is a good client.
Yeah, but that would be on our account, and we'd have no grounds to ask that from him. But here we're going in to his tenancy, and we're saying, we're going to fix this so that we can mitigate damages, so we can attract this new tenant. Because if we had just left it alone, no tenant improvements, no broker's commissions, it probably would have sat there like that. We have to entice a new tenant to come into the unit.
But the 120 that TI that you gave Starbucks was for the full 10 years that Starbucks signed up for, right?
I mean, they're in there for 10 years, but he still had to pay it. And I guess
I
what
understand.
I would...
It, and it's a 10-year payment.
And I guess what I'd say, Your Honor, is on the intentional interference claim, we're not conceding that he owned it at all. But if you take the $400,000 number and say, okay, if that's the value of the building, why wouldn't he have to pay the $150,000 off the top? Because that's what we had to pay to get Starbucks in there.
Sure, but if you take away the $400,000, which you're asking us to do, mm-hmm. It strikes me by the same logic, live by the sword, die by the sword, you wouldn't give you the $150,000 on top of that.
No, and that's just based on the contract, Your Honor. But I understand the court's point. Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.